Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Remix My Fitness podcast, where we learn that there is more than one way to train, eat, and live. This is your guy, MC Kim, aka the kind, intelligent man, and we are back talking about our backside. That's right, we're going to be talking all things glutes again this week. Last week, we had Olympian Philip No on the show, and he gave us his top three exercises to do at home to be able to increase the size of your glutes. This week, we're going to dive in just a little bit deeper, and we're going to be speaking with chiropractor Aaron Pereira from Durham Sports Medicine Clinic out in Whitby, Ontario. And, you know, I love today's episode because we get into all things like anatomy, why the glutes are so important to our lower back health, and he makes a complicated topic sound so simple. He just breaks it down, and I'm going to tell you, if your guy MC Kim can follow along and understand everything that he's saying, you the listeners out there, you guys are way smarter than me. So you're going to get this information, and I know you're going to implement it in your home workouts right away. So before we get into it and speaking with Aaron Pereira, I just want to mention, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Hit me up on the social. I'm on Insta. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. And of course, you guys all know I love the old school way, which is the email way. You can always hit me up at mckim@remixmyfitness.com. So let's get to today's show. Hey everyone, before we get into it with Aaron, I just want to mention that today Aaron and I, we talk about three different tests that you can do to test your glute strength. Now, if you want to see what those exercises look like or you want to give them a try, go and visit the show notes page at remixmyfitness.com, where you'll see short little clips of what the exercises should look like and what are some common do's and don'ts. And we're going to just slide into the middle of the conversation with Aaron, where he describes glute dominant sports and what makes them glute dominant, and he goes into the anatomy of the glutes and everything about it, and I gotta say, he breaks it down in a way that you just get it. It just clicks and it makes a lot of sense. So without further ado, here is Aaron. And I think I feel like I was going to say, like, we have the perfect guest on here today, because you mentioned football, basketball, hockey. Mm-hmm. Those are, would you say, like, the glutes, the butt is like an important muscle.
Glute dominant sports. Yeah.
Yeah. Very glute dominant sports. So yeah. Why don't you actually explain to the listeners why those are glute dominant sports and why those athletes would be important for them to have, you know, solid base or solid glute development?
Well, for a lot of those activities in sports, I mean, if you look at the prime motions that are involved in them, I mean, there's a heavy focus on explosive activity that's coming from the lower quadrant, pushing force forwards. Now, I mean, in any movement, we generate force from the ground, moving up. And one of the areas you have to have a good transference of that energy is coming from your pelvis in towards the rest of your trunk. We often will, you know, really harp and talk about people having strong cores, but if they don't have strong pelvises, there's a lot of wasted energy that gets lost in that transference from the lower quadrant to the upper quadrant. So for many of those sports, when you are trying to drive forwards, like, you know, if you're a football player or again, a hockey player, and you're trying to, like, you know, push for a puck and a fast break, if you don't have good quality strength and engagement of those glute muscles, you are going to get beat to that play every time. And for some of these sports, that usually means you're getting injured, especially in the case of certain football and rugby athletes.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you're saying that's all because they aren't able to generate the force in their pelvis.
If they don't, yeah. If either there's a mistiming with how they're contracting for one, or let's say they haven't positioned themselves in such a way where they can adequately engage their glutes in a, let's say, in a more effective way, you're out of position and then you're trying to go through a play from there, all of a sudden you notice that's why you feel like all clumsy or all kind of, you know, mixed up, or you can't get that sort of burst of energy to kind of move forwards. Mm-hmm. That's where that kind of comes from. There are oftentimes where I'll have, athletes from, again, different sports and the strange thing about it is this goes right from the entry-level ones with kids to professional athletes. Mm-hmm. You have ones out there that people you wouldn't expect that, that don't adequately, or even for that matter, know themselves, even though they've gone through years of training, they don't recognize, or no one's shown them in that way, that they aren't actually using their glutes in the most effective manner as they're going through a movement pattern. They oftentimes will use different muscles to engage to, you know, to go through that movement, but they're not actually using one of the big prime movers that should be, that they should be activating for that motion.
Absolutely. And that being said, I'll use myself as the prime example. I've been training people for the last 10 years. I've been, you know, being someone who was formerly extremely overweight. I was always into exercise and health and trying to figure out what is going to work for me. And then as I got better, I was like, okay, you know what? I really enjoy lifting. And it turns out all my squats, all my deadlifts, I've been just very quad dominant. And my glutes were not firing, which ended up leading to having pain, a lot of pain in my lower back, right? Could you talk about the connection between that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's often times where, I mean, you can say, look at a person who says like, oh, you know, my pain's all in my back. It's in my back. And rightfully so, yes, there's pain coming from your back, but that's not the origin of that problem itself. When you actually end up doing an assessment on this person and you break down their movement mechanics and you say, hey, listen, when do you have pain? If it's through specific movements or motions, and you take a look at those, you realize, well, you can generate strength through this area. You can generate engagement of your muscles. If you can create that supportive capacity around your lower back, well, why are you having pain? Especially if there is imaging as well, too, that's present there that says, well, there isn't any issue with, let's say, a joint or anything major with a joint or something that would translate over as to why they're having that pain. When you take a look and break down some of their mechanics of movement, it's like all of a sudden you realize, well, you're really not transferring energy from your, you know, from your legs in towards your hips properly. And you can sometimes see this where they have really tight muscles in their upper back, in their lower back, and you see really tight muscles, like say into their hamstrings or even for their calves for that matter. But all of a sudden you tell them to kind of, you know, do what we call sometimes a prone extension test or something, where you're trying to get them, hey, squeeze your glutes from here. I am. It's like, I'm trying to. It's like, well, if you can't do this, there's obviously a problem that's here. And I mean, these are unfortunately, with the way that our body is set up, it builds upon everything from the ground up. So if you have a deficiency in one system that's lower down on that chain, it's going to impact things much higher up in some cases, very, very significant ways. And that is one of the things that you'll see people who have a lot more problems in terms of having extension issues and towards their lower back, where as they're trying to extend their hip, because they don't have the capacity in their glutes, they're forced to use their hamstrings, they're forced to use their lower back extensor muscles. And that's where you start to get a lot of grinding in towards that lower back, a lot of pinching happening there. It's one thing that I include on all of my low back exams. It's always just a hip screen as sort of a standing operating procedure. And I would honestly say about like 8 times out of 10, you're going to find something in the hips that just is not firing the way you would want it to, or not operating in the capacity that you would expect it to.
You know, aside from the lower back, there are things like, you know, when I train my clients and, you know, they'll complain about knee pain, or they'll have developed sciatica as there are other common things. Would you say that those are also related or can be related to your glutes not firing or glutes not being developed enough?
You definitely can. I mean, we see this a lot in runners in particular, people who have the wonderful patellofemoral pain syndrome type of issues. What most of the research out there has supported is that there's a heavy influence of, sorry, just before I even get into this here, when we talk about the glute region, it's important to, or the pelvic region, we should make sure we just cover that. The glutes are actually a system of muscles. It's three in particular. You've got your glute max, which is the main force closer or main extensor, and to a certain degree, external rotator of the hip. You have your glutes medius muscle, which is involved a lot more in hip abduction, so bringing the leg away midline from the body. It's heavily involved in regulating pelvic stability, which is fairly similar along the lines of that is the glute minius muscle, which is on the top of those three, and that is one that blends into another muscle called your tensor fasciae latae or TFL. That is one that regulates the IT band a lot. And issues like, again, patellofemoral pain syndrome, IT band syndrome, those are heavily influenced by a lack of glute function, in particular some of those abductor glute muscles. If you don't have the capacity or the endurance in those muscles, they can have serious impacts and influences on the systems, not just up the chain, but down the chain as well, too, on the knee. I mean, you tend to see people who, and if you look at run patterns for them, you start to see their legs going all kinds of janky, you know, after about, you know, kilometer 3, 5, you know, 8. It's like, well, you know, why is this happening? I don't have any problems initially or something, but it's just during the course of the run. Well, if you don't have the proper engagement of those muscles and they fatigue too quickly, then all of a sudden the rest of the system starts crapping out on you. And that's where you end up seeing pain on the bottom of the knees or the outside of the knees.
Mm-hmm. And for you, like, where would you consider, the glutes or the system of glutes, where do you consider that in terms of the size of the muscle? Or like, so for example, you know, I think oftentimes we consider chest, back, legs to be considered large muscles, and our triceps and biceps, smaller muscles. Where would the glutes kind of rank in that?
I mean, for me, and this might be the lens that I look through, and partially because of the population of patients that I do treat primarily, but I view them as very, very important. Like I said, they're always involved in my low back screen. It's not just for low backs. I mean, when I do movement pattern screening on people, it's always an area that I focus on a lot with them. There's many cases where I have people who are who have come in with issues with, let's say, bench pressing, and I'll kind of trace certain issues back down towards the hips, and I'm not necessarily getting enough engagement and tension generated through their glutes. So I would say that it is. Those are larger muscles to work on. To be honest, they're also ones that are easy to isolate as far as telling people, hey, listen, this muscle here, you want these to fire. It's easy to kind of poke and press on those, as opposed to trying to get other muscles like some of your rotator muscles, your pelvis to engage. Yes, you can. Sometimes you have to kind of be a little bit more selective and trick, and they can be a little bit more tricky to kind of get people to recognize how, when they're activating those tissues versus some of the other glute muscles.
Right. So my question then is, glutes are, we'll agree. I also agree. I think glutes are considered, I would consider them a large muscle to work on. They're an important muscle. They can be easily activated. So then why are we having trouble activating the muscles in general? Like, I'm doing a ton of squats, but I'm using more quads. I'm doing deadlifts, but I'm using quads and back. Why is it so hard for me, and for anybody really who is having the similar problems, why is it so hard for us to activate our glutes?
I think the disconnect that happens for a lot of people is when we do compound movements. When you're doing, it's easy enough to say, okay, I'm going to, again, do like a prone extension maneuver where I'm lying down on my stomach or something and I squeeze through my glutes. Okay, I'm focusing just on this one area. But now all of a sudden, if I have to say, well, let me turn into what we call like a hip hinge maneuver, where you're going through a bit of a bend pattern, I'm bringing my hips behind my knees, bending down in a traditional squat position. We don't often realize that we have to generate force and engage those glutes from that position as well too. Because these seem like simple motions to do, like, yeah, I can get out of a chair. I mean, this is, let's say, without a person who's having pain or discomfort, if their attention is drawn to that area, it's a simple maneuver where they can do quite easily. We don't often realize how much we have to engage those muscles or when we have to engage those muscles. We just perform the motion or movement, and we tend to gravitate towards muscles that are in some cases easier for us to signal to fire to, what we call get more neural drive to, in terms of our make connection between our head and those areas. So that's the one thing I find that's interesting, because you can have a person say, okay, let's do this. Can you squeeze squeeze your butt muscles for me? Okay, they'll squeeze their glutes. Okay, well, keep those squeezed. Now let's go through a bend pattern. All of a sudden that disappears. It's like, well, why is there that disconnect from there? It's just because we don't make that connection between using the glutes during the course of a compound movement. And that's where I find where people tend to forget about things. And then all of a sudden that's what ends up leading towards injury patterns or poor biomechanical patterns afterwards.
And for you, what I know you see a lot of athletes, maybe the trend is a little bit different, but between athletes and we'll say the general population of people, have you seen like an increase or some sort of correlation over the years that you're seeing more and more people coming to you and you're seeing less glute activation from them? Is that, do you see any of that at all?
I would say as people, and it's actually interesting. I've seen this in people who were athletes I was treating originally, but then let's say for, you know, reasons, they kind of finished school, they weren't continuing on, they were a varsity athlete, but now they're in the workforce and they've gone in towards, let's say, more of a sedentary type job. They've taken sort of, you know, the corporate role, they've traded in their gi or their uniform, and they've, you know, put on a shirt and tie, and in those situations where you have people who are, it find themselves in activities or positions that are more sedentary in nature, kind of like we're doing right now, sitting in chairs. If you're spending this in 8 hours, you know, out of a day, we're not using those tissues as often, outside of us saying, well, hey, I'm going to get out of this chair. And maybe that, how often does that happen when you're, you know, especially now when you're working from home, in some cases you kind of, you know, start on a job, you look up and it's 2 or 3 hours later. So when you're, when they're not using those tissues as much, you start to see more of an increase in some of those cases. I mean, I would definitely say over the years, I've seen more people coming in with issues that are related towards some form with some influence of the glutes leading towards that problem. Now, would I say that there's like this big glute amnesia pandemic that's going on as well too out there? I mean, I don't think so. I just think that there's been more attention drawn to it. So more people tend to kind of see it now, you know, as a result, or it's more prevalent in sort of the, you know, the ethos that's out there amongst, you know, health professionals. This is probably stuff that was, you know, always there in the past. It's just that we never really focused too much on it. We were always kind of giving our attention to some of the other areas that had a lot more, you know, research behind it.
Right. You know, for me, like I've been seeing, I guess the types of people that I work with, the people who, mm-hmm. who have office jobs or people who work from home a lot, mm-hmm. who have a little bit more of a sedentary lifestyle, as you mentioned, I've mm-hmm. been personally seeing a lot more of an increase of lower back pain, mm-hmm. an increase, a lot more. I've been hearing a lot of sciatica, a lot. Oh, you know, yeah. 5 years ago, I would never hear somebody say they had sciatica. And mm-hmm. oftentimes, like the things that I would prescribe as workouts to do or sets to do would be, you know, very like, you know, glute driven, like bridges, mm-hmm. Squats, yep. things like that. And then they'll be like, no, I want to do more. I want to do lower back strengthening exercises. And you can maybe agree or disagree with me, but I think of it as like, if your lower back's already tired or if it's already sore, that's no different than, let's say, you trying to do as many bicep curls and your biceps are sore all the time. Why would you do more bicep curls, right? And instead, you want to strengthen the other muscles around.
I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head there in a lot of ways with that. That's one thing that I'll often preach to patients too. I'm like, well, listen, here's the thing. I understand your pain in your back, and I understand that, yes, core function is important. But if we're doing a core exercise with you, and you can get good engagement and everything, and mm-hmm. I'll do endurance testing with people for certain things. We'll keep them in you know, dead bug positions or plank positions or something, and we'll time and see how long it takes before they lose the position itself or they report the onset of symptoms. But I'm like, well, you've got decent quality of strength into your core. There's a reason why, though. However, you're having this pain, it's not like your core is doing what it needs to do, but if you're tapping out all the resources and saying, hey, you need to stay active the entire time because it's trying to do the job of itself as well as trying to stabilize for the pelvis and overcome the deficiencies that are there, your issue is not trying to do more core or the issue at hand is not trying to give you more core exercises. No, do some core exercises, that's fine, but you need to focus on the other areas that are mm-hmm. overstressing that area in the first place. So yeah, it's glute function is very important to that, and it does it does have a very heavy influence in terms of what occurs at the level of the core. Mm-hmm.
So if, let's say, I'm a patient of yours and I come mm-hmm. in and we've already determined that, you know, my glutes aren't active. They're not firing. They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing in the movements that I need them in. Like we'll say, mm-hmm. for example, let's say the squat, right?
Yep.
What would be a good way to activate them and to start to develop them? Like, what kind of exercises would you then kind of prescribe?
So for like, if we're saying, you know, a person who's like, yeah, I'm not using my glutes, you know, properly or effectively in that way. And particularly, let's say we'll use the example of again, as you said, the squat. There are ways you can kind of go about getting a person familiar with how to use the glutes in the squat from a pretty progressive way. For some people, depending upon their capacity, you might be able to say, all right, let's jump into a squat. And I may just say, okay, I'm going to cue these muscles. I'm going to poke and press on these areas and I tap them. I want you to, during the course of this movement, depending on how good they are at that squat, I want you to squeeze and engage those muscles. And, you know, great, that might fix the problem for them. But I would say in most cases, you do have to have sort of a framework or a path to that success, because not everyone has the ability to do that. So typically what I would start first with someone is, I would put them through that movement pattern and see where they're having sort of a breakdown in their movement itself. But I would say as if we're starting from ground, you know, ground floor type of thing, from a squat position, I usually would like having people keeping the legs in a bit of a wider position. So the feet just outside the line of drive of their shoulders. So if I go, I tell people, stand up, your feet are shoulder width apart. Now take a step from either side from there. At that point, once I've opened up the hips a little bit in that way, and you kind of have the feet pointed outwards, everyone's the neck angle on your hips, that ball and socket joint is a little bit different from one person to the next. So I tell people usually, like, I'm not a person saying I'm very militant. And he's like, hey, you have to have your legs at 45 degrees out, pointed outwards. I usually tell them you're going to point them outwards to where you feel comfortable as you're going through the actual squat or the bend pattern. You can adjust your feet a little bit here or there, but you'll roughly find that they will be similar, symmetrical on either side. So that said, once you kind of have them positioned up from there, and you have them going in through a bend pattern with a squat, I'll normally have them kind of do, instead of like a full squat, start them off with, let's say, a quarter or a third squat. So they're only bending and hip hinging very slightly. So as they're bending back from there, and I will sometimes have stabilizer, keep my hand behind them, or have them do this against using a physio ball or an exercise ball against the wall. So a wall squat. As they've got down towards just slightly into that position, I'll tell them to pause and hold here. It's like, okay, great. From this position, here's where you would typically do get out of your squat. You'd squeeze through your legs and you'd bring yourself back to a standing position. Correct? Yes. Yes. Okay. From this position, I want you to focus solely on you squeezing through your glute muscles, almost creating somewhat of like an isometric contraction, just at that one range of motion at that angle. And from there, we have them hold that for, let's say, about 10 to 15 seconds. At when we tell a person, say, from 0 to 100%, or 100%, you're giving it everything you possibly can for this contraction. I tell them I want a good 60, 70%. It's a subjective number, but it's designed that way because I just want people to sort of start to kind of feel like I'm putting effort into this area. So they hold that squeeze for about 10, 15 seconds from there. And then I kind of stop. Let's just kind of get out of the position. You're going to come back into that same position again and repeat this a few times. And then afterwards, once you feel comfortable that you know how to activate your glutes from that angle, now you're going to finish that squat, actually squeezing your glutes and going through that full motion itself. So it's one way you can start them off at that angle. And then you can progressively get them lower and lower. If I've got all the time in the world with that person, I tell them, listen, you're going to do, let's say, one set at this angle, and then you're going to try to go a couple degrees lower down for the next set at that point. As long as they're not doing anything that creates instability in their body or causes any pain, then that's fine. You can kind of continue on that trend. Once you get to the point where they're close to parallel, let's say, and this is using the ball, that's when I normally tell them kind of, we want to step off the wall now and away from having a support structure. This is where now you're doing this as a traditional bodyweight squat itself. But you go back again now to that quarter or third squat position, and then you start from there because you've taken away one piece of stability for them. So now there's more demand and placed upon other tissues in their body. So it's important to make sure that you are getting a person to kind of walk before they run. Because if you pull them right off the wall and say, hey, go back to doing that that full body weight squat to parallel, they may not necessarily, because there's more muscle that has to engage to create stability for their body, they may not be able to coordinate all that information where it's like, all right, it's shoulder, it's core, it's feet, and my glutes. So it's best to start them off again from that higher angle or higher range of motion into that squat and then kind of go from there.
And for you, what about, What's your opinion on bands, whether it's like power bands, TheraBands? Do you find that they're useful in help activating or developing glutes at all?
They're definitely useful. I mean, if you have access to using banding, I typically will have a person try to use just regular body weight on their own. But that said, if we really find they're struggling, that they can't make that connect of how to get tissues to activate, you can put them in very glute dominant positions, like, you know, a bridge exercise per se, where it's forcing those glutes to really engage. But even in that, in the context of that position where they really struggle to hold and maintain that tension, banding is a great tool to use to really overemphasize and engage some of those tissues. In terms of banding, the position does make a difference. I mean, the higher the band is on the leg, higher up, the less, let's say, the less demands can be placed on those glutes. The lower you move those bands down the leg, you know, past the knees, around the ankles, around the foot per se, the more influence that you get into the glutes. good example is if you're familiar with the exercise monster walks, mm-hmm. Or you know, lateral side shuffles is another term that they use for it. When you'll often see people in gyms or at home using banding for that, which mm-hmm. because in some cases, yeah, if they're trying not to, like maybe their glutes or some of their abductor muscles on their hip are good enough where they can do like 15, 20 steps and they don't feel anything whatsoever. So they may want to try to get a little bit more bang for their buck in that during that movement. They'll use some banding. They'll keep those resistance bands around their thighs. Now, if the intention is specifically, let's say your glute max muscles, which are more, again, extensors of the hip and slightly external rotators, it's better in some cases to use banding in different positions than others. If I'm using banding for, let's say, your glute med muscles at the side, I'm just going to keep those around either above my knees or just below, even mm-hmm. As far as my ankles. If I'm strictly working on towards my glute max muscles, I'm putting those right around the feet. There's been good study research out there, actually from homegrown from the University of Waterloo, that's shown that keeping banding around the feet from there, because of potentially how much influence it has with external rotation as well, tends to activate glute max muscles a little bit more. So using banding can be a fantastic tool to again overemphasize and really hit home, send that message home for people if they tend to struggle with getting to know where those glutes are and during the course of a movement or motion.
That's interesting. I've never heard of anyone banding around, I guess if this was my feet, band would go around here. And then what kind mm-hmm. of movements are you doing with it? Like, are you doing squats? Are you doing like walks?
So doing walks, like literally doing monster walks, where you're actually slide shuffles from side to side. Okay. Now you do want to try to make sure that your feet are not collapsing too far in, because at that point your hip angle from there, that you can cause some problems for yourself that way. But if you are keeping your legs out just beneath your hips from there, and you're doing side shuffles, I can actually send you the study if that's the case. But it's actually some pretty cool stuff there that shows that you actually get greater amounts of glute max engagement during the course of that side shuffle with heavy banding in that position. And that again kind of goes back to like depending upon what the movement or motion a person is having an issue with per se. If they don't know how to use the glutes or something in that position, that's where you can use tips or tricks to kind of get those areas to activate in that way. Mm-hmm.
So if you had, let's say, your top three banded exercises for glute activation development, what would the three be?
I mean, I'm a big fan of doing the supine hip bridge, or just the hip bridge, or hip thrusters is often what it's also referred to as.
With band below or above your knee?
So for those ones, I actually usually have people above the knee above the knee.
Okay.
Now that said, once they start to get, let's say for example, if they're really trying to get overemphasize something, or if they know how to activate those areas and they're trying to get more bang for their buck, yeah, you can move that a little bit lower down, below the level of knee. The lower down you get, the more demand or stress on that area to kind of stabilize you're going to have. But you can't go wrong with the hip bridge exercise. It's one that, I hate to say it's foolproof, but it kind of is in some ways.
Okay.
And the good thing about it is it's progressive. You can really increase the challenge to that exercise, and it doesn't let a person get bored with that, because you can move towards single leg, bridges from there. You can change the height you're doing the bridge from, you can add again resistance from there. So I like exercises where you can use that exercise, but with small tweaks here or there, you can increase the challenge of those areas. So people can find that they'll actually be able to see like, okay, I am having improvement, because before I couldn't do this variation of this exercise, but now I can, because obviously I've gotten better at activating these tissues. And then if you're consistent with it long enough, then you get that physiologic change and you start to get bigger muscles. But hip bridge definitely for one has got to be one. I am a big fan of doing the there's two ways you can kind of go about it, but sideline leg raises, or even for that matter, lateral walks or side shuffles for glute med activation, particularly because a lot of movements or motions we do in everyday life, I do like to get exercises that replicate those motions, because we use them so often. So it's a good way if you get a person trained on how to use those muscles. During the course of that movement pattern, they'll replicate that, on 6-7 times during the course of the hour, in some cases, depending on the movement that they're doing. Okay. Or what their job is. So I definitely like using those types of ones for side shuffling. And I would definitely say using some form of compound movement as well too. And for that, that is one where I do like going through deadlift patterns with people to really emphasize its influence involved with hamstring activation, as well as to a certain degree low back activation as well too. So, I mean, those are definitely exercises that I do like having people introduced to what degree. I wouldn't have a person, you know, go, you know, all the way down in a full, you know, a deadlift, let's say day one, but mm-hmm. we would train the pattern of movement of hip hinge and try to go from there. You start them off with, you know, with bending down at a higher height. So they're not going all the way down for one, but it's training the glutes in that position to get through that hip thrust position. Because it's important to make sure that we use these muscles and obviously not just one particular position or range of motion, but in a variety of ones out there. So at least that way it keeps the brain sort of remembering and talking to those muscles when you're going through those different movement patterns.
Hmm. I'm interested to hear that you didn't mention like clams. So like banded clams have been like a big one that whenever I train with clients, like, oh, I went to see my physio, I went to see my chiro, and this is a prescribed yeah. exercise. And clams are always there.
So the reason, and listen, you're not wrong about that. Clams are great exercise. I don't want to disparage anyone from using clams.
I'm just surprised they didn't make your top three, you know?
You know what, to be honest, I think it's overutilized. It's overutilized, and here's the thing too. Like I said, I like using positions that we tend to do in everyday life more often than not. So when you're going through sort of that that sort of opening position with a clamshell exercise, mm-hmm. I mean, that's great. You definitely get a lot of engagement of some of those of your glute med muscles, to certainly your external rotators as well too. The issue and challenge, issue that I have with clamshells and banded ones is that, okay, great. If we're teaching a person how to engage those muscles, they're fine initially. But if I want to put this in context of movement or motion, there's not often where I'm moving against a resistance where I'm opening my leg or shifting out towards the side. If I'm going through a bend pattern where I'm lifting my body up out of, let's say, a seated position, getting off from the ground or something, you're more likely to use certain glute muscles in those positions, let's say, or it's more, I would argue that it's more important to learn how to use the glutes in those positions rather than just, well, I'm lying on my side over here and I'm moving my leg from here. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, I'm sure there for certain people's industries or something, maybe there might be times where they're doing that movement more often than not. In which case, yes, there's a conversation to be said, like maybe this is more sport specific or job specific that you do this. But for me, I really am the proponent of using things that are functional for people in their everyday life. And I think that's why I tend to gravitate towards those activities and exercises. Again, there's things that sort of will predicate whether, you know, you add, you know, plus or minus one of those things. And yes, variations of, let's say, clamshells may be included in those as well too for that. But I would say for me, I really tend to gravitate towards ones that that people will use on a more day-to-day basis in terms of a functional motion pattern.
So one of the things I've realized is, oh, you know, I can't lift heavy. I can't go to the gym and, you know, rack some squats or rack some deadlifts. So mm-hmm. I have felt that, okay, but I'm still working out at home. I'm working out at home quite a bit, but I feel that now the glute size of it has shrunk quite a bit.
Yeah. So
my question is, can you develop the size of your glutes at home, and mm-hmm. or do you need the assistance of that heavy load to be able to actually develop some size, to develop some muscle?
So as far as development is concerned, I mean, it's funny because sometimes I wish these questions were a lot more like, you know, black and white, just yes mm-hmm. and no. There's always like, you know, versions of gray of this. So the short answer is, can you develop these muscles at home? Yes, you can. Do you require, you know, gym, like, you know, heavy equipment and resistance equipment to do so? No, but it's definitely helpful if you have it. Just because of the fact that how tissues and muscles in particular will increase in size is by adapting to that imposed demand. If you have an increased amount of resistance or challenge you put to that muscle, it's going to rise to that challenge when it's exposed to it consistently enough. Again, if you're a person who's doing more an endurance-based activity or something, you'll change fiber types to, you know, that match sort of that activity. But if the intention is that you want to create size and build some strength on those glute muscles, you do want to use activities or movements that, one, yes, have enough resistance to stress that tissue to that point, but also two, ones that are focusing on more explosive-based activities. So, I mean, if you're at home and you're used to, let's say, you know, going to the gym and, like, as you said, deadlifting, you know, a couple hundred pounds or something like that, and you don't have access to that equipment anymore, Are you going to see some form of atrophy of muscles if that's what you're used to doing on a regular basis? Yes, that unfortunately is going to happen. However, that said, can you sort of stem the losses? Yeah, but how you do that is by changing up potentially some of the activities that you do. Maybe that means that you focus on some forms of explosive-based squats or hip hinge type of activities. Or for that matter, when you if you do have some form of something you can add for some resistance. And I mean, you can get it as homebrew as you want. If you just have, put some laundry in a basket and put it over top of your hips, I guess, or something, find some ways of increasing resistance. You definitely can. I mean, you have the same, with the same amount of effort you're putting in at home versus at the gym using heavier resistance, will you see the same gains? No. The heavier resistance is always, with consistent application, you're always going to see a greater amount of strength being generated there, or size as well. But that said, you can still have improvements, and you can still sort of stem the losses by making sure that you are doing certain activities at home that are maybe explosive in nature, that are more dynamic, that are putting that level of stress and load on towards those glute muscles. So that's why, I mean, can you keep size and strength? Yes, but it's not gonna be the same thing as what you would see if you had access to proper resistance-based training equipment. If you do have access to resistance banding or something like that, you can get some good, work done. Again, just, explosive-based, squats, really kind of, making sure you're overemphasizing that squeezing towards those glutes, let's say. Again, doing hip thrusters from different positions as well too, with banding around your waist, works really well at home. Even for that matter, doing broad jumps will work. Yeah, either two legs, but more preferably single leg broad jumps work really well, because that's forcing you to kind of get really down low into a position and really explode through that hip hinge position on a single leg. So it's a really heavy single leg dominant activity. Again, if I'm comparing that towards a person who's, at the gym in the power rack doing some work there, no, they're going to win, 9 times out of 10.
Right.
But, you can still get good work done at home.
Okay. So you're saying, can we sum it up and say, there is a chance for muscle development, for hypertrophy at home?
I would definitely say so. Yes. Okay. It's just a matter of making sure that you're using the right type of movement pattern and effort level. That's what it comes down to.
Okay.
If you're using more of an explosive based activity, dynamic plyometric activity, yeah, you can definitely achieve that. As long as the level of resistance is great enough that it provokes that sort of stimulus response or adaptive response out of that tissue.
Okay. So you mentioned this is the perfect transition for this. You mentioned, mm-hmm. Exercises like the broad jump, and, mm-hmm. Since you work with a lot of athletes, I'm going to just generally say those athletes are probably not going to the gym and doing like specific glute exercises, focusing on the glutes. However, because of the sport that they're in, they require their glutes a lot. They require them to fire a lot, as you mentioned before. Mm-hmm. Would you say like some of the movements, for example, like I always think of it as someone tells me like, oh, I want to look this way, or I want to have this kind of body, and they oftentimes they'll, mm-hmm. they'll mention athletes, and I'll say, yeah. Well, if you look at a sprinter, a 100-meter sprinter, usually at the time they're, mm-hmm. they're kind of, their body type is a little bit different than a marathon runner, right? They need the explosive energy. They have a pretty heavy, mm-hmm. or heavier upper body because they're pumping, mm-hmm. their arms a lot. Also, they have, yeah. They tend to generally have larger glutes from what I could see, right? Or you look at fitness models, or you look at, mm-hmm. Things like that. Are there activities like the broad jump? Would you say like hill runs? Would you say sprints? Mm-hmm. Would you say those kinds of things would also help with glute development, with actually building muscle and size?
Definitely. I mean, anything that really puts you into more of that forward plane position where you're kind of pushing up against an angle, so hill running is a great example of that. Bear crawls on an incline position are fantastic for that. Mm. Even for that matter, it's when I kind of see behind you there, you've got a couple of the dip bars that you've got. Mm. Even putting those against the ground and going through like a forward push, like in more of like a horizontal plane, Those are all fantastic to drive forward to get activation of the glutes. And you're definitely right in terms of like, you know, looking at the different types. I mean, you have two, let's say, Olympic caliber athletes. You've got a 100 meter sprinter and you've got a marathon runner. Very, very different type of body types, primarily because of the different fiber types that are there. But because of the explosive and large range of motion that those sprinters have to go through their whole body, I'm glad you identified about muscles and towards the upper quadrant as well too, because yes, there's a lot to be said about them pumping their arms and throwing their body forwards to make it a little bit easier as they're in that sort of that forward plane position, driving forward. It does make it easier to kind of cut through the air a little bit that way. Versus a marathon runner who their range of motion isn't at their hips, isn't as large. So therefore they're working to a very specific range of motion. They need certain fiber types that are intended to be on for longer periods of time. So they tend to be the smaller and flatter ones. Mm-hmm. But it's, there definitely are ways that you can have people train at home using more, again, exercises that are have them push a little bit forward, really squeezing in towards their glutes, doing so. I mean, we mentioned broad jumps, but also as well, you know, vertical jumps as well too. Mm-hmm. I mean, is one vertical jump testing is one way we actually test for seeing if people have showed improvements in terms of when we're training them for sprinters, for sprint training for that matter, or football players in particular. If you're trying to, you know, increase your 40, that's one way that we'll also test them out during combines, is have them doing vertical tests to see how high they can jump.
Okay, very cool. So we are coming to near the end of the end of the show here, and I just have a couple more questions to ask you. So we have, you know, we've talked about glute development, activation. The, you know, you went through the anatomy of what makes the group of the glutes. Mm-hmm. What I want to kind of shift the conversation to now is, I guess, like society's view on glutes, right? So I think when I was growing up, it was actually kind of not good to have a big butt, right? And now,
yeah,
and now it's kind of all about having a big butt, right? And you know,
the booty is a good business to be in,
right? the booty business. You know, you'll even see companies like, you know, we have the name Booty in there, like Booty Boot Camps and things. I don't know if that's a real company, you know, I'm just throwing that out there, but you know, you'll see that, right? And on social media, it's if I just type in butt exercises or glute exercises, you'll see a tons of people working out with bands, right? And tell me, like, after the entire conversation, I think I know the answer to this, but like, is that realistic to get glutes and booties that look that way? And like the ones that you see in social media, a lot of the Instagram models, male or female, they say, hey, just do these. Do these openers, can openers. Let's do these clams, and then now you're gonna have a big butt like mine. Like, what's your opinion on that?
I mean, here's the thing: if you want to spend a lot of time working just on one area, you'll definitely develop you know, glamour muscles in that area. Mm-hmm. Is that going to translate into performance or into something that's going to say, hey, this will? I sometimes tend to kind of run this back towards people from a pain management standpoint. Is this going to help out with, you know, with pain issues or something? Listen, if you focus just solely on that one area, you may, you know, miss the, you know, the tree, the forest for the trees. You know, it's a situation where sometimes where people over exaggerate one area and say, hey, if I just do this exercises, yeah, I'll get to this level. Not always the case, you know, for one. And I like people training tissues up to the point where it'll meet the demands that they're requiring at them on a regular basis. And in some cases, just going a little bit above that as well too. So if, let's say you have a day where you have greater amounts of demand on your body and your capacity is higher than that, at least then you know that you can meet those demands. If there's a situation where your demands are higher than your capacity, that's where you get the chance of injuring something or giving yourself pain. I definitely, you know, it's, listen, they're nice muscles to look at and everything like that. But if your expectation is if you're just doing these simple exercises, you're going to get this. You have to have some very serious dedication, and you better believe that those aren't the only exercises that they're doing in order to kind of achieve that. There's accessory like exercises you need to do in order to perform some of those other exercises and activities, you know, effectively. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing a person on Instagram or something that's like, you know, have a 15-second clip of all these different exercises they've done. Those aren't the only things they've been having to do in order to kind of achieve that type of look for that area. Mm-hmm. I mean, we haven't even touched the topic of nutrition that's involved in some of that as well too, right? So, but sure. that's you know, a heavy, heavy influence on that as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned the word accessories. Mm-hmm. There's also accessories to help accentuate that, you know, like, you know, we were in our earlier talk before we started recording, I mentioned that my parents, you know, had a little shop in the flea market, and I used to kind of walk around and look there, and like the amount of things that they would sell to, I guess, help accentuate the way your glutes would look in pants and things like that was shocking to me. I was like, wow. I was like, they're basically selling pantyhoses with the things with the cheeks cut out so that they could pop out, right? Like that it was just crazy. So
apple bottom jeans were a thing, right?
So. And as I tell my son, like, everything on social media is probably fake, right? So just you know, take with you. So just before I let you go, I know you have your own tests that you do, but I've already done a couple tests myself to help gauge where I'm going to, like, to kind of give me a baseline of what my strengths are, what I'm good at doing, and what I need some improvement on. So I've done three exercises, and I would just love your opinion on it real quick. And
yeah, for sure.
Tell me if you think they're good or not. So one of the exercises I did, or one of the tests I did, it was I did a single leg hold. So I lifted one of my knees up, and I had my knee bent a little bit, and I held myself. Yep. And what I was looking for there was, one, how long could I hold that position, and two, how much of my hips were tilting so that it would compensate, you know, for it. So tell me, what do you think about that exercise as a glute test?
It's a good, sometimes it gets referred to as a stork stance test, but it's a useful test to use on people. It also gives you good diagnostic information as to, like, hey, are there other areas that are kicking out before you're seeing issues at the glutes? Are we seeing deficiencies in towards the foot, the ankle, and towards the knee? And that said, same thing too, in towards the hips, that you can see in that sort of bent position, are you having your hips sort of hiking from side to side from there? Are you having rotation in towards your trunk, trying to stabilize and create more stability for yourself? So it's definitely one that I would recommend to use as a diagnostic tool.
And what about, so another one I did was I did an alternating bridge, but I had, I used a broomstick just on my hips, and I would lift my legs up. See which side was giving me, you know, again, looking for the tilt of the hips, and I had a little bit of weight down on there, pulling on the stick. What do you think about that test?
It's a good test to use as well too. And I like, especially sometimes if there's a person really can't maintain that stork position and they're really struggling, following that up with a test like that is useful, because then you can see at that point where you've given them more stability now that you have more points on the ground itself and they're pushing up just through their hips. You can really see, hey, is it an issue maybe why they couldn't do that last test? It was maybe more related to their foot, which versus now when you're on the ground, if their hips are definitely sort of rotating out, or you're seeing a lot of hiking in towards their spine, as opposed to their, like, the movement's coming from their spinal muscles in their lower back, as opposed to the hip to create extension and stability, that's where you can really detect a lot of issues there. So it's definitely a valuable and viable test to use as well.
Okay. And the very last one was I laid flat on my stomach. I keep my legs straight, and I would raise one of my legs up, and I would time to see how long I can hold my leg up while keeping my glute engaged. As soon as I kind of felt something else, I would drop my leg. One thing I noticed was the range of motion was quite different between my right and my left side, and my strength level in terms of how long I can hold was actually quite different from one to the other. But what do you think about that test overall?
It's definitely a useful test to do, especially if you want to test a person in different planes and positions that that they're in. If you have them lying down on their stomach and you have them just, you know, squeezing their glute muscle to kind of extend their leg up a bit to see how long they can kind of maintain that position before they either have, you know, if their leg is straight, if their hamstrings are starting to kind of kick on and cause some flexion into the knee, or if you're starting to see now more extension towards their back, trying to kick in from there, that's when you can see, like, yeah, what the capacity of those tissues are as well. A good test to use, particularly if that you are trying to test a person to see, listen, if you're in this position and you can't maintain glute tension from here, this is where some exercises that you may be doing may be useful for you to do versus other ones, hey, you're not ready for yet because you don't have the prerequisites to perform that activity.
All right. Well, Aaron, look, we're coming to the end of the show here now, and I just wanted to ask you, like, for anybody there who is looking to, you know, develop anything, right, or develop their glutes, or really develop any muscle part, or lose weight at home, or anything like that, What's some lasting advice that you give, or what are some of the last words that you may have that listeners can, help get some motivation, or, maybe.
Well, the one thing is recognize that you don't need to have, it's useful and nice to have a bunch of, gym equipment and exercise, equipment, at your hands. It's not required. You can do a lot of great and very useful, work with, quite honestly, a chair, or even for that matter, nothing at all, just using a wall or something like that. The big thing that I tell people when they are doing exercise plans, particularly at home now, is be consistent with doing with that active care itself. If your intention is only to do like some of these activities, once or twice a week or something, you have to understand that the body adapts by consistent exposure to a stimulus. And if you're not giving the body enough stimulus to create that adaptive change, it's not going to bother wasting the resources to do so. So it's important to make sure that you are being consistent with that application of those exercises. And especially right now, beginning of the year, a lot of people have certain resolution goals and motivation is high. So try to stick with it as best as possible. Make those goals attainable. Start with simple things like, hey, I'm going to do these exercises. I want 3 sets during, during the course of the day. Start off with something simple like that and then build on it from there. But be consistent with your goals and make them realistic for yourself.
All right. Well, you heard it here, Dr. Aaron Pereira. How can people get in touch with you? How can they get your service? You're clearly on point with everything that you're talking. I've talked to a lot of professionals, and you are up there in terms of your knowledge. And from what I could see from your clients call you the body whisperer. I don't know if you know that, but they do.
Names you've got. Those are the nice ones. Sometimes when I'm not, When I tell people you come in for a result, and sometimes that means I can't be your friend too much. They use a lot of other colorful terminology to kind of call me too. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, for sure. I get the same thing, and I also give back to the people who treat me as well. But how can people get in touch with you? How can they know more? How can they get to know more of you, or find out or work with you?
You can find me online on our clinic's website at www.durhamsportsmed.com. We have a general mailbox. If you have questions, you can always email at info@durhamsportsmed.com. I do review those emails. You can also find us at on Instagram at DurhamSMC is our Instagram handle from there. And like I said, keep an eye out for that, because I am going to be doing some more posting of content on that. That is the plan. I'm actually in the process right now. If you can kind of see my little whiteboard there, it's about time to fill that up with a calendar of events for me.
Very cool. Well, I'll make sure I have that all in the show notes so people don't miss it. You don't need to go grab a pen or paper. We'll have that all for you already. Dr. Aaron Pereira, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your knowledge with us. This has been a fantastic chat with you, man.
Anytime, Jimmy. It was a lot of fun, buddy.
All right. Thank you very much.
Hey, everyone. That concludes another episode of the Remix My Fitness podcast. I want to thank again Aaron Pereira for coming on to the show, aka the body whisperer, and breaking it all down. I mean, I had a really fantastic time. I learned so much. All these conversations are reinvigorating my quest to banishing the long back. So, and if that is your quest as well, and you're looking to find ways to increase your glute size, you're finding ways to strengthen your glutes or getting rid of any lower back pain, then you got to check out today's show notes at remixmyfitness.com. Take the test and see where you stand. So until next time, go out there, set some goals, challenge yourself, and don't forget to have fun. Peace.